The Finance and Facilities Committee meeting of October 11, 2011 will commence. It is 6:04 p.m. First item on the agenda is to review and approve the minutes from September 12, 2011. You're good?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Do you need a packet?
Yeah, I got it.
You got it? Okay. Okay, then it'll be interesting to see if we can consume a whole hour and a half this evening with the short agenda that we have, but I think there probably are some topics of discussion. First item is the storm water and parking lot project. As you know, this is a project we've been talking about for quite some time, and we've begun some of the engineering work. Even though I would consider Bob the expert on this, we do have a packet for you that highlights all of the various options that the architects have suggested for us. So I thought perhaps at this time maybe I would just walk through those options with you briefly. I won't have a tremendous amount of depth of understanding because I think Bob, the architects just completed this and I haven't had a chance to review them with Bob. But in an overview, the projects will go from, the top page is just our existing Hadley. The first two pages is existing, and then we'll get into the options. beginning with option 5A all the way down to alternate C1. And what happens in those options, which we'll review a little more specifically, is where the storm water detention is going to happen and how it's going to happen and the number of parking spaces for each of those designs. And then the alternate is a whole other piece of information that I think we briefly shared with you at our last meeting. So page 1 of 10 is our current condition at Hadley, and that's just a drawing of that. And page 2 is the aerial view of our current situation. And you'll notice that the detention, above ground detention, that is located in the, about the center of the map, is the area that we're really focusing on redesigning. So that's first two pages, just the conditions that are. Then option 5A, I believe, is the option that you have seen most often, and that increases the parking spaces. It removes above-ground stormwater detention and adds complete underground water detention. Probably one of the biggest things to note on this is that we've taken the area that did house handicap over on the right side of the property, and that has all been relocated to the left side of the building. And you can only come in on one entrance with the buses flowing through, their drop-off being in front of the school and then exiting out onto Glencoe, which is a little bit of a change. Any questions on that option? I think that's the one you've seen the most.
How much? What's the volume difference in water retention underground versus above ground right now?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to. We won't gain. At this point, we've not talked about designing a gain that would house an addition. But we could talk about that. I think that was one of the questions you had earlier.
Well, yeah. I mean, once you've got all the other things in place, if you're like, well, it's only so many dollars per cubic foot of water retention, why wouldn't you expand it underground? In case you could point to it as in terms of wanting to build something later.
Right. And I think that had to do with location and probably would appear as another alternate, I would guess, to increase that underground detention. So that has not been fully discussed yet either. So we're still in the pretty early stages of that. But this presents underground stormwater that would accommodate the change in the hardscape here. The next option, which is option 6, you'll notice is a combination. If you look in the middle of the triangle of the parking lot, that is above ground stormwater detention. but there's also underground stormwater tanks that are lying underneath the parking lot area. So this is a little bit of a combo. Option 6 and option 5 have the same amount of parking, yielding 98 spots in the end. Option, yes.
Two questions.
Okay.
Option 6, is this one-for-one
Replacement?
Replacement.
Actually, we're increasing the number of cars by a few. I'm not exactly sure what number of cars, but
no, maybe. No, I mean one-for-one.
I'm sorry. But it's a combination of it. So
the combination gives us right back to where we were before.
Correct.
Okay. The only difference is that we can't put the poles in the triangle. The other is...
We'd have to locate the poles, light poles on the outside of that.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
So your light poles would be designed to be back further in the parking lot. But the same number of underground, or same amount of water. This above ground would be smaller than the current one, and it relocates where that above ground is.
Okay.
In option 7, you see the increase in the above ground stormwater and decrease in the amount of underground. So, and this is all built around costs, so we don't have any cost identifiers for you at this time. But as you increase your above ground, you decrease your underground. So I believe the intent here was simply to give you as many possible options as they could think of, while maintaining what they believe is a better, safer egress and ingress into the building in terms of traffic flow. Option 8 has the least amount of parking and moves all of your above ground stormwater to the center of the lot and builds your lot around that, rather than having the stormwater on the edge where it created some sight line issues, and has the least amount of parking.
So we'll lose parking with this option?
Yes. Okay. Option 9 reconfigures the whole parking lot and relocates the storm water detention at the base, at the corner of Glencoe and Hawthorne, and does it all as above ground. Makes for tighter parking, but can yield 85 spots. And then finally, the last plan is simply the existing plan, so that you would do nothing other than redo the parking lot and keep everything else the same.
Maybe this is a Bob question, but when you look at the area on here, the existing detention, I know it's more than 2 feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it larger than the existing?
Because in the other, if you look, I think, I don't like to be wrong, but I believe we're adding more hardscape than others, disturbing more space. That would be my kind of off-the-cuff answer without knowing exactly what your answer is, but your question is a good one.
That's because when I look at the redo, you see areas that the ones just to the east of the entrance of the school, now that you're getting rid of pavement but adding green areas.
Which option are you talking about, Dan?
I'm looking at option.
Okay.
But when you look to the east of the 3/4 concrete surface drive, you see those trees, three trees there? Option 9.
Okay, I'm on option 10, sorry. Okay, option 9 with service. Yes.
And see those 3 trees that mm-hmm. the sidewalk goes through. If you compare it to option 10, which is existing,
it is the trade-off.
Yeah, I'm just trying to. Mm-hmm. It seems like you're adding more green mm-hmm. area, but yet the above ground retention area is still very low.
I guess, to add, to follow up on Bob's question, the drop-off restricted parking for 6 cars, it looks like we're losing a lot more serviceable space.
In which design?
In the original design.
In 9?
No, I guess the existing 10.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a problematic area? Is this something that that little lot becomes a problem or an issue?
In the 6 spaces of restricted parking street.
Yeah.
Well, it does when you have events there, and on some days, like on Third Thursday or.
Okay. So this is correcting a issue or a weakness in that area.
What we believe is a weakness in the whole design here initially, and then also there is a weakness in the area which creates parking problems no matter what.
All right.
Yeah, so the almost one option I'd be curious to see is if you left the existing detention but went to the modified plan where you didn't have an entrance on anything.
Well, let's talk a little bit. I'm looking at option 10.
Right.
And left the existing detention, you're suggesting that you reconfigure the rest of this space so that it's not a drop-off lane?
Right. Just kind of like what the other options are.
So it would come through and go straight across
right.
and out.
And then you would close off.
And you would close this off and make parking?
Right.
Okay.
Is that a problem with the buses? Is that too tight of a...
This won't... Yeah, that would probably be the biggest issue, is getting the buses in this area and turning them. You can't get your buses... We don't bring big buses in down at the very tip of this, except the special ed buses, so way down here. And this is a pretty tight turn. So I would guess that that's probably the reason why that's not an option, Dan.
So no buses go through today?
No, buses come in down currently at the driveway, marked at the bottom of the detention area. The buses just come in and they then exit out the other side. So my guess is they can't make that turn. And certainly bus after bus would have difficulty making it. You know what I'm saying, in terms of if they can make it, the speed with which they're going to be able to do it is going to be really probably slow. But let me ask the question nonetheless, just to see what their response is.
And then for the hand, I saw the notes on here that say they're going to have space distance to the ramp, and it looks like they went from 5 or 6 or 5 RC4 handicap spots.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just a ratio of building population? I mean, we're not below any requirements.
No. No. Well, we would not make a choice that would take us out of compliance. Yeah. We currently only have 2 handicap spots for parking in the existing lot.
No, there's more. There are 2 different places.
Oh, they're on the other side. The other side of the
track. Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. No, I was looking.
2 on one side and 3 on the other.
Yeah, so you have 5.
Yeah.
I mean, and you could make another spot a handicap spot. That's not. You're just sacrificing a spot somewhere else. I believe the recommended option remains 5A, along with the alternate. So do you want to look at, we can look at the alternates to see your perspective on that.
That the concrete service drive, is there a reason that we're not using that? It just seems like there's a lot more. I'm looking here.
And which option?
It just seems like that we're just adding a lot more green space. I'm just wondering why we're doing.
Well, we were trying to. The idea here is to restrict cars in here, so that it's mostly special education drop off and students foot traffic.
Okay, so the intent here was just to eliminate
any parking or traffic flow.
And the reason for that is
safety.
Is a safety issue. Mm-hmm. What is it? Just the
and the service drive. You know, our ComEd is here. You know, all of our meters
the vault
and all that.
So we need to keep that
we
clear.
We have to keep that there.
No, it needs to be there. But I mean, it needs to be clear. Mm-hmm. So they can't have parking there.
We would prefer not to. I mean, we currently have parking there, but we would prefer not to have parking there. We have lots of kids walking here and cars coming. Okay. You know, kids are walking on the sidewalk, and then you got cars zipping in there.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So that's a
it's a safety
definable
issue.
It's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, do you have any questions on the alternate, which is to do the bus lane on Glencoe, which would really alleviate some traffic issues for us and get the buses off the street so that you could continue to have two-way driving on Glencoe?
The only question I had on that was, and I was just playing devil's advocate, is, you know, today, if you have the buses there, then you can only have one lane of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And if we push it off, now we have two. Does that now mean traffic is not impinged, so you may have potentially higher speed cars next to the buses?
Well, I mean, we have two-way traffic there now.
Only one lane.
It's very difficult. They don't block. There's no sign at the end of the day to block the traffic, so you still have two-way traffic going through there. Like some of our schools, like here, where you can't come down on Greenfield between certain hours. We don't have that on Glencoe, so you still have that potential. And you know, I would say certainly getting them off the street does not eliminate the possibility that a car will travel down that street faster than they should.
That's why I just didn't know it the way it is. Does that kind of people say, oh, I'm not even going to try it?
Well, it's posted speed limits during school hours.
Yeah, but it is a hassle, that's true. So probably fewer cars go down there. But for some people, that's their exit. You know, which is when we were looking at this from, you know, different perspectives. Some people, if they can't go out Glencoe, have to go back through town, basically, up Hawthorne and around and then back out to Western or or to, I mean, not to Western, but to Geneva. So we want to maintain two-way traffic there. We want our buses to be able to get out that way. We don't want to impact any more than we already do traffic on Hawthorne. So we wouldn't want to divert all traffic down the Hawthorne Way, because that's, you know, that's a whole other traffic as well as safety hazard there.
There's two-way traffic, you know, every morning.
Yeah.
Even with the buses?
The buses in the morning drop off and leave. So the buses don't park along Glencoe in the morning. It's after school. They line up on Glencoe, and the kids come out and get in. But we don't have restricted...
There's a hand. There's maybe two or three buses.
How soon before school lets out that they start lining up? I mean, when the kids are loading, do the stop signs go out and there's no traffic? So once the bell rings and the kids are actually loading the buses,
the traffic is
they put their signs out, mm-hmm. and they halt all traffic. So the two-way traffic is really while a single bus driver is sitting in an empty bus,
right,
waiting for school to finish.
Right.
Do they wait? Is it a constant as the kids run out
yeah,
the load?
Yeah, constant flow.
Or do they have to wait outside until the guy opens the door and then they can all?
I don't know the answer to that. Do you know? I sort of think they get on the bus when they get out there.
Okay.
I'm trying to imagine after school, and I think kids just get out and they get on the bus. They don't wait to line up and then be allowed on. Because there is that, you know, race to the back seat, too, that...
That's right.
I remember that. I mean, it sounds
like...
No,
there's a pecking order.
Not any longer.
You don't sit... Sixth graders don't sit in
the
bus.
That's no longer true. We're changing the culture.
It seems like your alt C1.
Alternate, mm-hmm.
I mean, that seems like a no-brainer. It just...
Well, it's something that adds to the cost of the project. So we really have three things to think about. We have to think about total underground stormwater. We have to think about the degree to, you know, partial, whether that's going to be a partial or you're going to change the configuration. And so stormwater, paving, and off-street bus loading are the three things that you really have to think about, which constitute the total price of the program. So we're saying if you do underground storm detention completely, and you redo the entire parking lot, which we see as a necessity no matter what, and then you add the off-street bus parking, then we're talking probably, you know, we're talking over $1 million then. Yeah. Project goes up to about $1 million.
On the Glencoe side,
mm-hmm.
you have to cut down all those trees that were planted.
Yeah, well, you have to replant them. We would be obligated to dig to pull them up and replant them.
Okay.
And you can see on the plan, those trees are all listed on the other side of the sidewalk.
So they'd be on the.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the town.
Correct.
Okay. So is that a village?
No, that would be our responsibility.
But I mean, as opposed to just cutting them down and leaving.
We couldn't cut them down.
We'd have to.
If we're going to cut them down, take the roots out, we'd have to replace them.
But who tells us that?
The village.
Is it Parkway or Wheaton's Parkway?
I don't know, but Bob has met with both the village and the city, and had a meeting just this past Friday with them. And the question was asked, I believe, Dan, did you ask this question? Would there be more stormwater detention required? And they felt that the amount of disruption to the green space for the alternate would not be significant and would not require extra stormwater. But they would have their village requirements. And trees would be relocated.
But it would seem to me, if you're digging an all up anyway in that parking lot, if we were ever going to need to provide more stormwater detention, that's the time to do it, as opposed to...
Which is, I think, Steve's question. So that's the fourth option and could become another alternate, would be stormwater that has a larger capacity for future construction or future changes to the footprint of the building.
Well, I think, or Drew, are you saying, while some vendor has all this heavy equipment there doing the large parking lot, their bids on the alternate are going to be less expensive than some summer where you just ask them to come and
that's part of it.
Glencoe by themselves.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of it. I'm just thinking, though, from the standpoint of, we got to dig up this parking lot anyway, because it's 15 years old and it's
well, the top layer is 15 years old.
The right. Parking lot itself is much older.
But you know, if already doing some stormwater detention, I wouldn't think it would be that much more, because you're ripping it up anyway to connect more tanks.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying, is once everything's, that you've dug a hole.
Yeah, just connect it.
Get the maximum capacity.
Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, I don't know what the next step is here, where the finance committee is giving their opinion on each option, or we're taking all the options to the board, or, you know, like I said, to me, all the above ground options, besides just leave it the way it is, don't really make any sense to me. You know, why change it, you know,
okay.
If you're not going to, why just move the above ground extension to another part? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't look, that's why it seems like there's a disconnect when you look at how small the existing above ground detention is compared to these proposed ones.
Mm-hmm.
You see this large,
it's just like a much larger size.
So yeah. We'll have to ask the question about that and why those drawings appear to be larger. You know, are they proportionately the same, or they just look disproportionate? I don't know the answer.
They also don't show whether all, if you do move it, you have to fence it in, just like the current one.
Correct.
And it's just some hole in the ground there that you don't dump snow, you don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, why just move that?
Well, then if we fence it, then all we're doing is changing the site issue from in front of the building to the
right.
Corner of the building.
You would be addressing the sight line issue, that safety issue, by moving the detention.
But if you,
which is one of the critical parts of the plan.
But if you move it to the corner there, and you have to put up another fence, you haven't really fixed it. You've just moved an issue.
Well, you would fix it from the standpoint of sight line. You wouldn't have made it look any nicer, but in fact, probably worse. But
I mean, if it's somebody goes to the corner and they can't see around the other corner because you've got this big fence.
Yeah, It could be another.
That's why I say it might be another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, another safety issue, just changing the sight line.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and I think that also goes with the questions I was asking around what the existing layout, if you, had only one-way entrance on from Hawthorne and got rid of that concrete sidewalk area. This is option 10.
Option 10?
Because what are we talking about here? Or if you had this and then, continue the sidewalk here, close it off so you couldn't get in or out here, mimicking the other options that we had, and then getting rid of this portion, just, simulate.
Right. But where is your entrance?
The same, it's the entrance here. You could modify it.
So you're saying making the entrance maybe back here?
Right, modifying it so that you get enough of a...
Well, the entrance actually would be pretty similar.
Well, this end, you still have to get a bus that's got to make that turn. And then, I suppose if it angled in, more like a ramp.
Right, if you took the entrance off of any one of the other options and dropped it on here, and then closed off this other exit on the Hawthorne, and then got rid of this,
right.
This
right.
piece right here.
Made that parking. And a bus. So that it's almost a straight line. Mm-hmm. Now, where that doesn't work, well, unless it works, here would be my question about that, Dan. Let me turn here, come back up. Well, you'd have to relocate these. So you'd have to give up parking spaces over here unless they could probably come in here somewhere. Okay, so you're saying still eliminate this entrance as well. Okay.
And the answer is, it's almost like the same concept.
Right, it's almost, I know that entrance is shifted to give a softer angle.
Right, you'd have to move the entrance down so that it's not making a turn.
Right, yeah, either move it down or open it up so that you can have more of a straight shot.
Yeah.
Right.
But you've got a natural curve in the road there, so I think probably getting him in sooner is probably a little bit easier. I suppose you could have parking along there. Okay, well, I will take that back, share it with Bob and the architects so they can play with that idea.
But given all these options, what is the plan?
We don't have a plan yet.
Okay, but I mean, what does the administration want from the finance committee and from the whole board?
Well, I think ultimately what we would want to see is that we have the ability to go out to bid and get prices on. Now, if we end up with...
So we should eliminate options that maybe...
I would say we should eliminate, get ourselves down to at least two. One would be with underground storage. The other probably with above ground storage. And then the alternate.
Okay.
You know, with this plan 10, we would certainly not look to increase storage because we wouldn't be doing any underground storage. So maybe if what I've heard you say is that the partial storage and moving the above ground detention doesn't make a lot of sense to you.
No.
So that eliminates those. So in your conversation, we still would like to keep on the table 5A. So it is 5A? Yeah, 5A. And then come back to you with this plan 10, option 10, right. Incorporating Dan's suggestions here.
Well, I guess I would just, you know, I mean, I'm just throwing that out there, but I would summarize it as, you know, keeping existing detention so you don't have to do underground.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking the best pieces of 5A and implementing them here.
Mm-hmm.
Or the desired pieces.
And then cost guesstimates as to what each of those proposals would cost and the cost of 1C or C1.
So do all options consider all new lighting fixtures and things like that?
Well, I'm going to guess yes, they will, but I'm not going to guarantee that. If we stayed with this plan, I'm not sure once you get down under the ground if there won't have to be repair or replacement of current light fixtures. I don't know.
How old are those lights?
You know, I don't know the answer to that either.
Well, seeing as we just upgraded security cameras, I didn't know if we've got everything dug up. Is there a plan to put cameras on the lights, the new light poles and things like that?
We haven't talked about it.
Okay.
That would probably make sense if you got everything tore up anyway. So we've got two options right now.
And an alternate.
And the alternate, right. The alternate is just...
And I would say on that second option, we don't really have a plan yet. I mean, what Dan has summarized...
Sort of configuration.
Yeah, looking at different... Looking at... still working through an option for current situation.
And the administration's point or issue with the... With existing detention is the sight line.
The current sight line, correct.
Okay.
Now, I would say Dan's suggestion to some extent eliminates that. And we do have an interest overall in the district of moving towards greater underground detention, simply because, you know, we have so little space to work with.
Maximizes green space.
Or maximizes your space, period. Whether it's green space, in most cases it's green space.
I guess I would argue if you had more underground detention, aren't you kind of getting rid of green space? Because you're not, you know, the green space absorbs the water, and so by putting underground detention, that means you could add more pavement and more parking.
Right. But in some cases, like if you look at this building, we would be not adding pavement, we'd be adding play space because of where the detention is. In this case, we'd be adding more pavement. So, I mean, it might have multiple purses. It gives us more space. That's why I wouldn't want to say only green space.
So with this overall parking,
mm-hmm.
let's say we would do the 5A. That being said, do we have enough parking at Hadley with this space and then a lot behind the, you know, on the east lot?
We still have on-street parking at Hadley daily. So, in order to bring the parking off the street, well, the drop-off, the bus drop-off would create additional parking for parents and visitors and events. Would not create additional parking for faculty or staff that are there.
But for the parking is not allowed outside school hours on?
It would be. That's what I'm saying. For events or for after the hours in between drop off and pick up, people could park in those spaces.
Right. I guess how is that different from the same as today?
Well, we don't have that parking now.
We don't have the off street, but can't you park on the street after school?
Well, that's where people park now.
You can park on the street.
Yeah.
During school.
That's
you don't mainly park there because it's the closest place to park.
Right.
To the door.
So then people do park on the street now.
Okay. I guess
I'd try to
understand the net. I guess I'm arguing I don't see a net being a park.
Well, if you're getting people off the street, off the thoroughfare and into a parking lot, that would be a goal that we would have. As many people as possible.
I'm talking about alternate A, I guess. I'm talking about the alternate.
Right. It's only creating parking for events, and that's not as disruptive to traffic flow.
Okay.
Have you been to an event over at Hadley at night? It's pretty dicey in terms of parking.
Okay.
Most people park in the church, a Covenant church.
But for like a musical. I mean, we're talking about limited times, no question about where it's a huge distraction to the neighborhood or it's a safety issue because of the volume of that. Obviously, for nights like parent night or it would help, but that's still not the huge volume that you would get like at a play or something of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, so, but for the most part, there's enough, you say there's adequate parking for the staff?
I think there's adequate parking for staff and not much else.
Okay.
So when, let's say on a day, when I go over there during the day, I usually can find a parking space, but not always. Sometimes I have to park on the street. So depending on how many people may be coming in and out of the building during the day, or visitors or presenters or activities that are going on would determine. But I think one-to-one faculty to parking spots, or staff to parking spots,
okay.
Yes, there's adequate parking there.
Okay.
How many staff do we have?
Oh, all these number questions. I should have forgotten. Remember, I'm in finance committee. 78, I think. 78.
But there's a faculty parking lot.
Staff.
Okay. Also.
Well, you've got the parking lot in the back.
The parking lot in the back is also used. So
yeah.
Not all 78 are parking in the
front lot.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions on the parking, or any other thoughts that you'd like me to take back to Bob and take back to the architects?
So it sounds like, are you saying the next steps is to go back? I mean, I'm looking at what Bob had written down here. He had a few weeks coming to the board. Is that what would happen with the last options, or would they come back to the finance?
Well, I don't believe we should be taking options, all of these options, to the board. I mean, I think Steve raised that question earlier. I think taking two options, and the question would be, does the board, is the board willing to pay for bidding on two options? That would be your discussion, really, before you
and
get
that
approval.
And the cost is borne by the professional fees of the architect?
Well, the...
In preparing the documents?
That would be some of the cost,
but
they don't
bid.
Pay.
Yeah.
So just be preparing two sets of bid documents.
Yeah.
Is it...
Okay. So at this point, your recommendation, and I would guess we could put this on the agenda for next week for discussion, our next board meeting, but we'd want to bring back to you at finance the redesign of the existing parking lot to accommodate some of the suggestions that were made.
What's the village's timetable in their bidding process?
I think they're on the same timetable we are, basically trying to go out by December.
Okay.
Does that make sense to everybody? So this will appear then both on the finance agenda and discussion. We're comfortable with that?
For next month.
For next month.
And, okay.
Or for the end of the month, I should say.
So I think maybe then, you know, we talked about getting resident input or letting residents know about it so they can...
Well, I think we would do that once you give us permission to go to bid. We need to get that going. If the board has said there are two options, we get those out to bid, then we could look at community input and see what their feelings are. The challenge to that might be, Dan, though, if we get community input and the community likes one plan and it comes in more expensive than the other plan... So we may want to see what the bids reveal to us and then seek community input. But we could certainly talk about that process. I don't know, Julie, do you have any insights into that?
Everything we were discussing today is public document. So anyone in the community can come and give us their opinion, send us an email, whatever they need to do, it's there.
Right, no, I'm just talking about in terms of some of, like, when we did the Forest Glen parking lot, or there's been other times we have people come. We did a public hearing.
Public hearing would probably be required in this.
I know. I'm just worried that usually that happens, but I guess I would call it too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's already, here's the option, we're going to do it. Input.
Well, I mean, if cost, depending on what the factoring is for cost, you know, you can decide you want to open it up for, but I would think the board would want to reserve the right to... You could share the options, but make sure you reserve the right to have final input on that. Because if you know, cost may, you may decide that cost is, it's going to be more, but you think this option is better, or you may, or you may say no, we'll go with this option because it's lower cost, but the community likes the option that costs more. I mean, so I do think you want to give consideration to. Well, how much input, and what would you do with that input?
I just want to make sure that there's an opportunity early enough in the process for it to be
Do you have a suggestion as to when you think that would be, now that you know kind of where we would go from here?
Yeah, I mean, probably after we have our discussion, you know, between our discussion and the vote,
and the
prior to the vote of, you know, what we're going to go out to bid with.
Oh, okay, prior to going out to bid.
That way we have an opportunity to, you know, at least change our mind or say, okay, we want to do one option, or we don't want to bid both. We want to bid both.
So within a 2-week period?
How are you thinking this will get?
Do like a town hall meeting?
No, I was thinking like you could just do maybe a mailing to the residents, you know, in the nearby area. I mean, it could just be a localized targeted, hey, here's what we're thinking, here you go to the website, here's the plan, check it out. If you have any questions, we welcome your input.
Mm-hmm. Julie, do you have any thoughts on timing of that sort of thing?
Well, I think that if you want to look into it, and for something like this where there's already been input, you know, from residents, you need to have a little bit of flexibility so that you can make some modifications if you need to. And you might get some good ideas too, but you'll have input whether you formalize it or not, so it probably is a good idea to
do it before the bids go out.
Do it while you still have some maneuverability to adapt it a little bit here and there. The main contours of the plan are what they are. But that's what we've done in the past, is done that 250-foot diameter mailing and e-news and have the plans available at CSO,
or had like sense. And I think Dan is saying the process in and of itself is fine. It's the timing of the process that's been problematic for us in the past. So if we did it, which really would be, we should do it preceding the October 24th meeting where that discussion would occur.
Yeah, I mean, that could,
let people know that here are the plans. They will be discussed at this meeting, and we will welcome your input for up to a week, because there's only a 2-week frame in there.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal.
Okay.
But I would say the people in proximity to the parking lot, they're going to be affected in terms of notification that construction is happening, no matter what happens.
Right.
So you're interested in their input about the fact that we're doing construction on the parking lot?
No.
Or are you interested in the users of the parking lot, which would primarily not be the people that live right across the street, because they just walk to school?
It's the fact that, you know, you're changing the parking lot. There could be, you know, a potential impact to traffic flows. You know, we're going away from, we got the one entrance and the two exits. Now you're doing the one exit. You know, and people, when they see something changing, would like to know that if they give input, it's at a point in time where it can be heard versus too late in the process. I mean, I just think it can't hurt. What's it going to hurt?
I'm go ahead, Julie.
Before the 24th, is that
what you said? Well, I'm saying we would do it in conjunction with the 24th as an announcement that it would be discussed at the board meeting. And then between the 24th and the November, whatever, 14th meeting, you know, there's a 2-week window in there where comments could be made, because any adjustments would have to be done immediately then and brought back for action, but really they couldn't be brought back for action. They'd have to be brought back for discussion again. And I will tell you that if Bob were here, he would be cringing because the timeline is so tight on this. So let's just take a look at page 5 of the finance packet.
I mean, I think our job is to think of what the issues might be, Dan. I mean, what do you think could be a problem, or what would somebody want to alter? I mean, we have to put ourselves in their shoes and ask those questions now, too.
So here would be my thought, that if, you have that window, you'd bring back modifications. The board would have to have time to discuss those modifications to see whether or not they think there are reasonable modifications to be made. if they're reasonable modifications the board feels, then they're still comfortable to say, well, go out to bid. I mean, actually, you could even do it as an alternate, I suppose, if that, if you, you know, came up with, somebody came up with something totally different that you weren't prepared for.
I mean, in theory, I think it could happen, and I'm not opposed to this, but like you said, I don't want to change the timeline here.
That would
We've already presented six different options and said, let's get it down to two. Mm-hmm. Now we're saying, but somebody across the street may give us some option we've never even heard of, which would be an eighth option or whatever. I mean, it's just like, where do we...
I'm not saying someone's going to give us an option, but they're going to give us feedback, which typically, you know, when we do the public notice, is at a point that it's too late to affect anything.
I think if you don't do that, you offer them the opportunity to wait for the if people haven't had a chance to kind of talk about it, and you know, it's really also quite a bit about them having a chance to have it explained and walk through it.
Okay, well, let me share that thinking with Bob, and then we can plan around some communication that we'd work with Julianne for the October 24th. And what we'll frame it in is feedback, not option development.
Yeah, that's, I guess, what I'm getting at. Everyone's going to have their own idea of what they want.
You're limited.
Nobody's going to want it emptying into their, you know, headlights into their picture window or something, or whatever, but I just wondering, you know, what we're going to...
Well, either way, you know, you've got people who are affected in that area right now, will be affected in the future, because there's
they live across from a school parking lot,
there's
no matter
what. Right. So, I think the way we frame it in terms of feedback is probably the language that we would want to use. Okay. may I summarize what next steps that we're going to take between now and the next meeting?
We're not putting up 90-foot lights with sports activities.
Not in that parking lot.
Well, you could play, what is that, on rollerblades, the hockey?
Oh.
Set up like a big rink or something.
It's true.
Start a league.
What we want to look at is, and I think this is just an answer, though, I think we probably eliminated the conversation, but why does the stormwater detention look so much larger in all of the other options where it's above ground than in the existing? We want to look at some further development of option 10 that incorporates all of the best ideas of option 5, but keeps the above ground storm detention where it's at. We have eliminated all of the other options that have above ground storm detention. And the question was raised, will we need new light fixtures in both plans, or would the existing plan be able to...
Yeah, that's our major one area I saw. Mm-hmm. Because we're doing all the security stuff.
Right. And then can we combine that with security?
Outdoor cameras that could be put in place. That might be something we should look at.
And then finally, build a... build a communication plan that can occur between the 24th and the 14th. October 24th and November 14th. Does that summarize what we agreed to?
Yep.
Okay. Then I know in your packet it's arranged a little differently than the agenda. The next item is summer capital projects, which is also the first, it's page 3 of your document. Which are Bob's suggestions for summer capital projects. Obviously, the bulk of the summer capital projects would be Hadley. That is the dominant amount of money, and so I don't think we need to have a lot of discussion on that since we have done that. And then the next area that he's suggesting we do is look at painting all of the buildings. We painted Lincoln, you can enjoy our new paint as we're here this evening. And Bob is suggesting that perhaps we want to just paint all of the elementary buildings next summer and have that project out of the way and done. And then some smaller projects that would be district-led for $50,000, which would include door replacement at some of our schools. So his thinking at this point is the the bulk of money that we would spend next summer, 98% of it, would be devoted to the Hadley parking lot project. And that the other small percentage, 200,000 estimate, would be spent on smaller projects in the district.
The painting, and so like here at Lincoln, we had the new overall color scheme, and then we had this 21st century classroom. But they have their own scheme?
The 21st century classroom here does not have its own scheme. It has the Lincoln scheme. We put the Churchill scheme in the 21st century classroom, and then we put it in Franklin, and we put it in Forest Glen. So when the schools get painted, they will have that scheme.
Oh, okay. I thought, for example, 21st century.
No. They're part of the whole building. It's just that we did those rooms to get a feel for what the design and the painting would look like.
How much was the painting at Lincoln?
I don't have the exact number, but Bob's estimating about $50,000 a piece. I think painting here was
just inconsistent with.
That's consistent with this because you do the other three elementary schools.
$50,000 a piece.
Yeah. I don't know the exact number, but it was in that ballpark.
And the other one is a small
door replacement. We have some doors that are just in need of replacement, and we would do those internally, but we've been painting them, making minor repairs on them, but they are deteriorated to the point where some of them are difficult to open and close and keep locked. So, the timeline for this, obviously, would be to bring this back to the board in alignment with the Hadley project because they're so intertwined. So at this point, would there be anyone who has any questions about us doing the painting, all the other three buildings at once, getting that done, and then the small kind of projects?
When was the last time the buildings were painted, other than?
10 years ago, I believe.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions on summer capital projects?
At least the district budget projects will be a little more detailed than that when it comes to
exactly what we're going to do. Yeah, the budget would be $50,000. Okay, the last item is sort of an overview of what a creation of a financial advisory committee might be and just a general timeline for getting that started. And so I don't know if you have any questions about it, but we're thinking really about a group that can come together and serve as a sounding board, a think tank, a group of people who represent various financial expertise who can look at our long-range financial plans, look at the things that we value in our educational plan, and take a look at our budget, either our budgeting process, our current budgets, our two-year plan, and offer us insights. We would see this as an opportunity also to build ambassadorship by helping those experts understand our educational plan and where our priorities are and where we want to see the district in the future, and that creates our budget priorities. So we see them as a knowledge bank that can go out into the community also and help others understand, but that's a side benefit. That's not part of the charge of the group that they would be crusaders or anything. But, you know, we do believe and know that the more knowledge you have and insight into why decisions are made the way they are, that you have a better understanding of those decisions. So that's our thinking to bring to this group as a possible charge and idea for the committee.
I was just curious around the process. It talks about selecting the committee. Who is selecting the committee, or who's grabbing the applications, and what is that process?
I think we'd have to talk about that. If we have an administratively charged committee, the administrators would do that work. But I think having a member of the finance committee participate in that process with us would be important to have as well, because this is a group that will work with the board. And I think there needs to be a board liaison to that committee, one or two, however that works. So I would see us doing that kind of collaboratively. And the reason I use the idea of selection process as opposed to invitation or volunteer, whoever wants to do it, we would start with volunteers, people, we may tap people who we know have particular expertise to see if they would be interested. We could send out a little bit broader invitation to targeted members of our community. But I don't think we're looking at a broad, I don't think we're looking at a generalist group. We're looking at a specific group of people with expertise. And I think we'd want to make sure once we saw all of the people who were interested that we made a decision as to who could best serve the interests of that group and have the greatest amount of insight in working with us.
Are they required, you know, same like our other master facilities plan, are people required to be residents of the district?
It's interesting.
You're talking about like village people that, you know, obviously work in the community, but maybe they're somewhere else.
Right, a Chamber of Commerce person could potentially not live in the community. I think that's an interesting question.
Not that I'm opposed to it, because I think it has expertise or knowledge outside.
Potentially.
Just curious.
Potentially. I would say my first reaction to that without, you know, reflection is it should be community members because they have a vested stakeholder. On the other hand, a businessman also has a vested stake in this community and may not live in the community. Right. So I think that, you know, probably as we get further, we would have to build a rubric of qualifications and what would be the parameters for selection. To raise a good point, though, Dan.
I like the fact that you identified that there'd be a named commitment of, you know, 2 years to it, because I think it takes a while for people to get up to speed, especially if they've not been coming to finance meetings or board meetings, not reading minutes, not having history with, and I'm not saying that in a judgmental way, but just, you know, they just haven't, you know, done that. So I like the fact that it's a couple-year commitment because I do think it takes a few months, if not a whole year cycle, to understand how our budget works, the capital summer projects, et cetera. So.
Well, and we would want some of this to be learning. So if you are only looking at a commitment of 8 meetings in 2 years, you're going to have some intense learning anyway in that period of time. So you really almost spend your first year learning. And your second year advising or, you know, producing that think tank effect. We did look at not starting this until the spring. You know, we have a lot going on between now and the spring in terms of getting some other financial pieces underway. And do not want it to coincide or in any way appear to be coinciding with our negotiations process. And so I think by the time we would get through a selection process in the spring, then beginning that learning process over the summer would be a good time because we have fewer board commitments and we'd be able to set aside some, you know, a couple nights out of the summer when we might be able to meet with that group. So maybe I should move that to 10 meetings instead of 8.
To have a couple of like orientation meetings,
like the two in the summer, and then four and four.
Yeah.
Yeah,
of course, Julie's looking at me with grins on her face because she knows my pattern.
There's always more meetings.
There's always more to talk about. But that, I mean, that might be a better way to get it, kick it off with 2 meetings in the summer to orient, get the agenda really set, and then move into your advisement period. So, any thoughts on that? Other than Dan's idea?
Yeah, I think it's something that we talked about, and if the scope of the committee is understood and the folks coming on board understand it and agree to it, then I think that there could be some really good benefit on a lot of different levels. I think I mentioned before that when my husband served on a District 87 Facilities Committee, the charge was very ambiguous, and while it was an interesting, you know, board to serve on because they learned a lot about the district and the facilities at the 4 high schools and kind of how they kept things going and the budget, you know, they were left with, so what are we supposed to be doing about this? And there wasn't really, you know, an advisory role for them. So I'm glad that we're we're being responsible about setting that, that out from the beginning.
Well, I think those, they don't look at it as an advisory role. It's just a way for to deflect, I don't know what the word is, like criticism to say, but, you know, this is standard procedure. We've had these other community members here. There was no, you know, what we're doing or proposing is not something that's very abnormal.
No, not at all.
You know, or something. That's what I'm saying.
So
you've got
engaging.
People there. They're maybe not making the decisions or doing the things, but it's just, you know, to say, hey, other people have looked at this.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I think our district has a good history of engaging community members and, you know, to your point, Ian, with that last, the Task Force Culture of Care the committee, that there were many more who wanted to participate, that you said, great, let's find a place for you and work for you to do, et cetera. So
I don't think we would do that with this group.
No, no. This has to be
a tighter
focused
group.
But the point is that I think our district has been very welcoming of investment and engagement and conversation. And this is just another opportunity.
You know, Jan, just in writing this question down about would we allow someone who is not a resident to be a part of this, I probably would say the caveat being you have a business in town. There's some vested interest in the community as opposed to just a general interest in school district finance.
Wasn't there something about like maybe a village?
Yeah, government, like someone from the village or someone from the park district. I think that's, again, something to talk about.
Okay.
Would those be members that would be valued in this arena and what we're looking at? So I think what our next step would be to say, let us work in a small group. Perhaps one of you wants to work with Bob and me to begin to kind of shape that. How would we, what would be the criteria for selection? Where might we go look for some people and tap on the shoulder? What might be some names of people we could start to gather? And then, you know, be ready in the spring to start that invitation process.
If you want, I'll work with you.
Okay.
I'll be part of that.
Great. Okay. That is it for the Finance Committee, unless there are other topics that we need to raise.